Hi everyone, this is Diva from Bloodhunter and you're listening to the Metal Pit Podcast.
Welcome to the Metal Pit Podcast, where we dive into the albums and bands that made metal what it is today. I'm your host, Blake, and pardon my voice as I was sick a couple days ago, so it's a little froggy at times, maybe. Anyway, visit our website, themetalpit.org, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Metal Pit. And for our podcast, check out our website for the podcast, which is themetalpitpodcast.com. And you can follow that on Facebook and Instagram at The Metal Pit Podcast. And you can check out our YouTube channel, which is at The Metal Pit 666. And if you have any questions or comments, you can email me podcast@themetalpit.org. And today, today my guest is one of the writers at The Metal Pit, James. How are you today, James?
Hey, Blake, how's it going, my friend? I'm excited to be back for another episode. I appreciate you having me back on. And it is 75 degrees Fahrenheit down here in North Carolina, and the sun is shining. So perfect day to talk about some heavy metal.
Well, it's like 35 degrees Fahrenheit here in Canada, but the sun is shining also. It's just not as hot as you, I guess. But spring's coming, so yes. So last week we did Overkill, and that was your first episode because you were just a fan of the podcast, but now you've joined the Metal Pit website. So now you're part of the team, the Metal Pit. Got you back for a second in a row podcast. Okay, so what year is this album?
This was 1982.
Didn't even write the year down, but we're going to talk about Twisted Sister. Now, do you remember when you first heard or saw maybe Twisted Sister?
I do, yeah. So when I was 16, so going back to 2006, and ironically, that was the year they put out their pseudo Christmas album, if you will, 19 years after Love Is for Suckers, which was released in 87. So I was a junior in high school, and my dad's job actually took the family all the way up to Long Island, New York. And I had never even visited the state of New York before, much less lived there. So that was an interesting experience. And Long Island was a place that Mr. D. Snyder would frequent quite a bit, particularly the Starbucks that was just down the street from Hop Hog High School, which is where I ended up graduating. It was my 11th and 12th grade years that we lived there. So graduated from Hop Hog, shout out to Hop Hog High School, Long Island. And so D. Snyder would roll through that Starbucks quite a bit. And although I tried my hardest to frequent as much as I could, just in the hopes that D would roll through while I was there, I never, unfortunately, never got to see him. But I did start listening to Twisted Sister at that point in time. And probably true of a lot of people, it was a couple of songs that got the most attention, which would be I Wanna Rock and We're Not Gonna Take It. So those were the two songs that I heard first and loved them both, but particularly I Wanna Rock because it's just an incredible anthem. So I started with those couple of songs and then I kind of worked my way backwards once I did some research. Thankfully, I've grown up mostly in the internet age. So when I heard something that I liked, I was able to just hop on Google or go to Amazon and sample some songs and things that people that came before me did not have the chance to do in decades past. So that was helpful to be able to do that. And I realized that Stay Hungry was their third album. So I had a couple albums before that to check out. And I went down the Twisted Sister rabbit hole and never came back.
I'm thinking, even though I'm older than you, so I was around before, but I don't think I heard Twisted Sister until a Stay Hungry album, as far as I can remember anyway. And of course it was, you know, the videos, We're Not Going to Take It, and I Want to Rock, especially. Because, yeah, I don't really remember hearing them before or hearing of them before. Now, they're labeled as So I would say it was the videos that I heard, and I think, because I don't know what you'd class. I don't really, because they were categories as glam metal, but I don't really consider them glam metal. Would you?
No, I was going to say that same thing. I really think they had a heavier edge than most of what you would consider glam. Now, I mean, you could make the argument that by the time they got to Loaves for Suckers, there were some songs on there, maybe a few on Come Out and Play that were a little more on the commercial side, but you know, glam metal, hair metal, which I think is a little bit of an odd descriptor because everybody had big hair back then. I mean, we didn't call Slayer hair metal, right? But most of those guys had big hair too. So, but I definitely think Twisted Sister, I would lump in more with like the Wasps of the world as opposed to like Poison.
So would I, because I don't know if I have it here, but one of their albums, probably Stay Hungry, is voted in some hair metal list, but I'm thinking, but they're not really hair metal. I know D dressed weird and stuff, but whatever. Now, did you see there was a documentary on like Netflix? I'm not sure if it's still on Netflix, but of Twisted Sister, did you ever see that?
I have not,
Okay.
but I was watching something fairly recently in preparation for this episode, and it was centered around that whole PMRC hoopla where D. Snyder found himself at a microphone, te basically testifying in front of a lot of people and Tipper Gore and all those other folks who were attacking the music. And I will never forget just how eloquently and articulately D. Snyder really just surgically broke down all of their arguments. And you could see that there was a very noticeable look on the faces of people who were opposing him at like, wow, these people are surprised that this heavy metal singer with these wacky outfits and big hair and makeup and all this different sort of thing, he was able to so articulately defend his position, and he came across looking better than anybody who was opposing him. And so I thought he handled himself very, very well. And it made me even prouder to be a heavy music fan after seeing that. So.
Yes, I think we've talked. I've talked mentioned that before. I'm not sure why, but we've talked about that before on the podcast at times. I can't remember exactly now why. Probably just because other groups, there was a Filthy 15 or something that PMRC had, and so Judas Priest was on us. We might have mentioned it then, and but we maybe didn't talk much about D. Snyder. Yeah, but that is something I do remember seeing and stuff too. Yes. And yes, he did show, because it was on the documentary too, about how he walked in there with his ripped jeans on, and he had a piece of paper in his pocket, and he was unfolding it and stuff, like making it look like he doesn't know anything until he started talking. But yeah, so that was a big thing for him, and probably really helped with his sister too, because he's, like you say, he's standing up for heavy metal too and stuff like that. And of course, they only have six studio albums, and one is a Christmas album, which I have never heard, and you told me you've never listened to it either. Might have heard one song from it, I think, but I didn't realize they made a whole album. I just thought they had one song, Christmas song.
Yeah.
And so last night while I worked, I listened to like Love Is for Suckers. I don't even know if I listened to that album before. I'm not really sure. But I went through it quickly and thought there's a couple of lame songs. There's a couple of songs that are okay, but there's a few lame ones that obviously, yes, was maybe not hair metal, but at least it was kind of lame and like we're just trying to get on the radio and get back to where we were. But of course, you're not going to match Stay Hungry, which isn't the album we're going to do today, even though it's a good album too. But we are going back to their first album, which you already said, 1982, right? And
That's
I can say, okay, Under the Blade. So we're going to do Under the Blade. And it's a debut album, of course. Was released on Secret Records, which I've never even heard of, but I guess. And that was in September of 1982. I forgot to look up. I'm sure I have those on vinyl, probably. But it was re-released by Atlantic Records. But I guess the sound wasn't as raw or something like that. I don't know if I ever heard the Atlantic Records re-release. I don't know. Because as far as I know, the Spotify release, the one that's on Spotify, is the old version, as far as I can remember. And anyway, I don't know. I think we'll just get into. Oh wait, I was gonna say Pete Way was the. He was a bass player for the band UFO, old band UFO, and he produced this album. And this album is a lot heavier. This is probably their heaviest album, I guess, I would think. And then the second one was pretty heavy too. And Stay Hungry has its heavy moments, but of course it was a little more commercial, but it's still a pretty good album, I think. And then we had Come Out and Play after that, right? And with we'll talk about that later, I guess, more.
Yeah.
And of course, Dee Snider is still. And I don't know, the band is, I don't know, I've heard stuff about the band getting together again. I don't know if it's to make an album or just a tour or what, but we know that Dee Snider is still going. He's had a couple of solo albums in the last, whatever, 5, 6 years, and a live album, and they're pretty good. It's, and like, because he had some heavy people helping him and stuff like that on those albums. But I don't know what exactly is going on there. So anyway, we'll get to the album. Sorry, I'm on the wrong page of my notes. Here we go. Oh, I did. I wanted to one say one thing about the documentary. I was surprised. Like, it's a good documentary. I thought there was supposed to be two, but I've still only seen part one. So I don't know if there is a part two, and I just haven't found it or what. But it's very. It talks about all their early days in New Jersey and Long Island, whatever, playing small clubs like every week. It sounded like, I think, I wish I could have watched it again right before we did this. I didn't have time, but that's all they did was play in these clubs, and it was always full, like whatever. I thought, I don't know how many people it held, 1,000 or something, but it was always full for them. But this was before they had any records out or anything like that. And I was surprised to hear Dee Snider never drank alcohol or did any drugs. And I was like, what? Really? Because it seems
Not a
like
common thing, right?
he seems like he would, but he never did. So that was one of the most surprising things from it. So anyway, we'll get to the, oh, I'll mention the lineup on the album, I guess. Dee Snider, singer, of course. Eddie Ojeda, hope I'm saying the name right, on the lead guitar. JJ French, also lead guitar, Mark Mendoza on the bass, and AJ Perro on the drums, who, of course, he's passed away. I think the rest are still around. And JJ French, he's the guy that started Twisted Sister, I think, because Dee Snider wasn't with the band at the start. So let's get to this album. And it starts off with What You Don't Know Sure Can't Hurt You. So what do you think of this track?
Yeah, it's a cleverly named track right there. What you don't know sure can hurt you instead of what you don't know can't hurt you. Really, really great song to get things started. It starts off with this sort of mid-paced guitar picking. It comes in a little bit slow, but then as the guitars really come thundering in, Dee Snider shouts out, "Good evening." It almost sounds like a vampire or something, but very very cool sort of intro there, and then his powerful vocals kick in, and the build up to this song, I think, does a nice job of creating anticipation in the listener, because even as D starts to sing over the notes, it still remains in that intro for probably close to a quarter of the song, which is really cool. But it's got a solid upbeat pace to it. We've got a chorus that is melodic, but it's still heavy at the same time, and this album, I think, just as a whole, does a great job of balancing heaviness and melody. Then after the chorus is sung a couple of times, we get a nice little bridge before Dee Snider just lets out this ferocious heavy metal scream, almost reminiscent of some of the vocal stylings that we would go on to hear in genres like thrash, which of course would be given birth to the very following year when Metallica put out Kill 'Em All and Slayer put out Show No Mercy. But there's just a killer guitar solo that breaks forth as D lets out that growl, and the solo just blazes. So really, really a fantastic opener in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's, even though it's not, it's kind of, it's not about, like the lyrics aren't necessarily about playing live, even though some of them are, of course, or at least they could be taken that way. Now, I'm not sure if they play this song first at every Twisted Sister show, but they should, because of course, Howie starts it when he says, "Good evening, welcome to our show," of course.
Yeah, that's right.
So I might, because I have seen Twisted Sister live before, but I was late, so I didn't see the first song, and I didn't bother to look up the list thing that I did some other times because I didn't have time. But I know he gets to the, and he gets to a part in the song. I'm trying to look at the lyrics here so I don't screw it up. I lost it, but oh yeah, he says, "Aren't we a pretty picture? Aren't we a load of fun? Don't let me in." Influence you, I'll do that when, and the way he says I'll do that when we're done sounds so much like Alice Cooper to me. I don't know if you're listening to Alice Cooper much since you're a younger person, but there's a few times in this album that I hear Alice Cooper, and I know he's probably influenced by Alice Cooper.
Absolutely. I had
Yeah.
that same exact thought. Good
Okay.
call.
But yeah, when he says that line, he sounds like Alice Cooper, and there's a few times in this album that he does sound like that, and I'm sure that's why. But yeah, it's a great opening song, and I'm sure it is one that they probably, I would assume still, if when they play live, if they play live again, I mean, that they would start with that song, because it's a fitting, it's kind of weird that a young band would think of starting their first album with a song saying it like that. It's kind of funny. I
Yeah, absolutely.
think. Okay, and then we go on to the Bad Boys of Rock and Roll. And what do you think?
Wow. Well, Blake, the Bad Boys of Rock and Roll, I mean, we get the first and really only, in my opinion, commercial sounding track on this album. It is very melodic and perhaps has a bit of a cheesy sing-along chorus, if you will, but I say, who doesn't like a little bit of cheddar mixed in with their metal, right? I mean, it is such, this is a really good song. I mean, if you pinned me down and asked me if I had to pick a least favorite on the album, this would probably slot into that, but that doesn't mean that it's a bad song by any means, because I truly love this entire album. It's one of my favorite debuts in all of heavy metal. But it's just a lot of fun. D continues to sound great on this song, and I wonder if perhaps they wanted to have just one moment of respite on this album, because so much of it really is heavy and ferocious, especially considering that this was 1982. So I mean, you might look at Motorhead's Iron Fist or something like that that came out around this time, as far as the heaviest stuff that was around maybe then. I know Priest put out Screaming for Vengeance this year. Maiden put out Number of the Beast this year. So there were some heavy things on it, but this album has lots of heavy songs. This is not one of them. There's another great solo here, and it is one of those songs that'll get caught in your head right away. So if we have anybody listening who maybe didn't know a whole lot about this album beforehand, and you're like, man, we're only on track two, and I'm already getting this radio-friendly sounding tune, I beg of you, please hang with us, because this album really, really picks up the pace as we go. But great song.
Yeah, I would all yeah, I would also say this is the least heavy, yeah, the not as heaviest song on the album or whatever you want to call it. Like, not that, I mean, most people aren't going to think of Twisted Sister as heavy, of course, but there's people that if you just listen to Stay Hungry, even though Stay Hungry has its heavy moments too, which we'll get to in our top 10 song list probably. But yes, it's this is the more commercial ones. More, most of the rest are kind of still have a heavy thing that probably wouldn't. I don't know if they ever made any videos for this. I never went back to look to see if they made videos. If they made videos for this album, I'm sure they probably did. But I know they didn't really hit it in the video thing till Stay Hungry. But anyway, then we go to Run for Your Life. What do you think?
Yeah, so like we were just saying a moment ago, if you were not crazy about the commercial sound, well, that is all gone as we get into Run for Your Life, which rounds out the first third of the album. We get a very heavy, just ominous introduction to this song that gives way to some plodding drums, right? Those drums come in. It's a pretty slow pace, almost doomy in a way. Not sure if doom metal, other than the sounds that Sabbath had brought to the table years before, I don't know if doom was really a thing, in the way that we know it now. Candlemass wouldn't put out their first album until 86. So I'm not sure how prevalent doom was outside of the world of Sabbath. Blake, I know you're a big Trouble fan. Maybe they had put out their first album by now, but I feel like we might be a little bit early for that, but you're the expert on that. Well, not me.
I'm going to have to look it up.
But it really is just a fantastic beginning. And then Snyder begins this song vocally. He's almost crooning over this lightly strumming guitar pattern. It can start to lull the listener to sleep just a little bit, but it's only a little over a minute into the song. And then it kind of fades away as Dee proclaims, "Run for your life," in this very, he's got this nice gravelly sort of quality to his voice where he can be very melodic, absolutely, but he's also quite ferocious in his gravelly voice as well. And as he proclaims, "Run for your life," that's when that nice heavy riff kicks in. The drums really pick up the pace, and it really does become more of a scorcher as the song goes on. And while the verses are being sung, I just can't help but think, wow, this guitar riff just screams heavy metal, period, just straight up. We got another great song, a solo, as the song approaches the final minute or so, and the soloing is something I'll probably harp on just about every song. But I also love the gang vocals that they do during the chorus. I think that's a nice touch. And the song really ends on a strong note. So if you were not crazy about track two, track three should get you back on.
And Trouble's first album wasn't until 1991. So yes, it was
definitely. Oh, wow. Okay.
But yeah, yes. So just to let you know there. And I guess, I don't know, on Spotify it says who's doing the solo. I'm not sure if it knows correctly, but it said Eddie did the solo on that Elp song. Not that it matters. I know they're both, even though I never really considered, like, I never really thought of, like, you know, they used to have guitar polls and things like that in magazines, but I never really considered Twisted Sister for anything of that. But I like them, but I never really considered anybody, like, there's no Randy Rhoads in the band that stands out above anybody else. They're good. And just that, you know, they're a good band, but I never really thought of, not that the solos are bad or anything, I'm just saying they never stood out to me like, oh, I love Eddie as a guitarist over somebody else. Or same with Iron Maiden, I never really even though I loved Iron Maiden, I never really considered, I knew Dave Murray and Adrian Smith are good guitarists, but I never would say vote them number one or whatever as a guitarist or whatever. Oh, excuse me. But yes, Run for Your Life is kind of like I guess it could be from a horror movie, but of course it's something else. I don't know if you have notes about this, but of course Dee Snyder wrote a horror movie or a few too. So these lyrics could be like from a slasher flick, I guess you could say. And we get into another heavy one. We get into Sin After Sin. And what do you think of this one?
Yeah, so Sin After Sin, not to be confused with the incredibly well-done album by Judas Priest that was released 5 years earlier in 1977. But Sin After Sin is another great song. And even though this album does have multiple songs that have a little bit slower intros that really build the anticipation, this one, it just jumps in right away with that killer riff. There is no such lead up in this particular song. Just a killer riff. It's a brief buildup, but it really doesn't take long for the song to kick into high gear. When Snyder comes in, he comes in on a little bit of a lower note vocally. He's not really pushing his range too much, at least not toward the higher end as he first starts coming in. But we have another fantastic chorus. We get more gang vocals when you hear some of the backing vocals as he shouts "Sin After Sin" as that chorus continues on. And it just like, it almost has a bit of an eerie vibe to it as you hear those voices proclaiming that phrase. And then we get almost like what sounds like a mini solo that plays in the background each time the chorus is sung. But Dee sounds pretty ferocious throughout this track. The melody is there, but he's dispensed with any type of crooning on this particular song. He's a very versatile vocalist, certainly one of my favorites. And I've got to repeat yet again, we've got more great soloing. Eddie Ojeda, who I think goes by the nickname Fingers. I'm not sure where that comes from, but he and Fingers and JJ really they're a great, great guitar tandem. Probably a fairly underrated one, as you just said. They weren't probably listed at the top of too many polls, and there are some great guitar duos, Tipton and Downing, and Maiden, their revolving door there. You've got Wolf Hoffman and Accept. So there are a lot of great guitarists in metal, but Fingers and JJ really, really hold their own on this entire album. And it's just a straightforward driving heavy metal song. There's nothing particularly complex about it, but in my opinion, that's what makes it great and effective. Another strong ending. So yeah, great song.
Yeah, and like I th it probably they were probably influenced by Judas Priest too, and that's probably where the song title came from. I'm assuming, not that they're stealing it, because everybody has song titles and whatever. But it maybe has a little even influence in the riff there that starts the song. But yeah, the gang vocals are great, like you said, and yeah, it's one of the better. Well, I don't know if I don't think. Made my list, did it? It might have. I forget. Sorry, get to that later. But anyway, yeah, it's another good song. And then we go to this. Probably, I don't. Not sure. I don't have the record in front of me. This is probably the end of side one. Shoot 'em down. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, another great song. And for me, I don't know if you thought this, Blake, but as the intro really got going, I thought this is not a sound that would seem completely out of place on an AC/DC album. That was something that really jumped out at me. I kind of, in fact, today when I was listening through this album a couple more times, I thought to myself, I could hear this riff being played, this intro being played by Angus and Malcolm Young and whether Bon Scott or Brian Johnson, I'm a fan of both guys. Their voice coming in and singing over it, and I thought this wouldn't be out of place on, For Those About to Rock, We Salute You. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I don't know why this is maybe just a bit of a side note, but the drums on this song seem to have an even more 80s feel to them than maybe any other song. I don't know if it's just sort of the way they echo out, but yeah, we've got another great intro here, a very simplistic chorus. I mean, it's essentially just repeating shoot 'em down, until he gets to the end of the chorus when he says shoot 'em down to the ground. But it works really well. I mean, sometimes, like I was kind of alluding to on the previous track, sometimes less is more, right? There's no need to force something and trying to sound more complex than is really necessary. Some songs may call for more complexity, but in this one, I think the simplicity works really, really well. The guitar strumming during the verses, in particular, the guitars are especially heavy. And this song, once again, does a great job of balancing heaviness and melody. Hopefully, by the way, all you listeners, hopefully your face is still attached after that solo finishes, because that is an absolute melter.
I was just reading here. There's a Canadian journalist, Martin Popoff, who has a whole bunch of books on heavy metal music and bands and whatever. So if you want to, if you can go check him out at your bookstore or online, he's got all kinds of books. But he said in the, back in when this album came out, because he reviews albums, of course, too, or he used to. He remarked on how the influence of Judas Priest is evident in Dee Snider's compositions. So, like, it's that kind of goes back to the last song that we were just talking about. But anyway, excuse me. But anyway, I didn't, yeah, that was the last song on side one. I forgot there's 10 songs. Oh, no, there's nine. Well, I don't know. There's nine songs on my album. I don't know if you have 10. You have nine? I was just
Yeah.
looking on Wikipedia and it showed a 10th song, but that was added on the re-release, and I don't have that in my listening. So anyway, yeah, good song. So now we go to side two, and then we got a song. Now this is a Kiss song, I'm not sure, or a Kiss album, I think, title. Not sure if they're influenced by Kiss too, probably. But this song is called Destroyer. And what do you think of this one?
Wow. So we have arrived. This is, in my opinion, the heaviest song on the entire album. You could make an argument for the title track, which is coming next, but I really think that this is the heaviest song on the album, and it goes to show you, as much as I love thrash and songs that are played a million miles an hour, it does go to show you that something doesn't have to be fast to be heavy. And I think we saw that come along when, as doom progressed, and then another subgenre called sludge. Shout out to Crowbar, one of my favorite sludge bands. You know, bands can slow things down and can still be really, really heavy. And I think that's what we see a lot with this song here. So it begins, once again, you have this ominous sort of deep breathing. It almost sounds like Darth Vader is letting out a few exhales at the beginning of this one, or maybe something out of a horror film, perhaps, like we were just talking about a moment ago. But when those drums kick in with that slow, plodding guitar rhythm, you know you're in for a treat, especially if you don't mind songs that slow down the tempo just a little bit. And D comes in with those killer gravelly vocals. Once again, his voice, in my opinion, the most ferocious on this song that he sounds throughout their entire catalog. Really, really well done with the vocals. Now, during the verses, the pace takes on a bit of a sludge feel to it, like I was talking about a moment ago. But the whole song, I think, really evokes almost sort of a sense of dread in the listener. It could very well be the heaviest song in the entire catalog. Keep coming back to that. The solo, once again, very well executed over that plodding rhythm that's maintained really throughout the song. Some songs will be fast in the verses and they'll slow it down in the choruses or vice versa, but this one really does maintain that deliberate pace really throughout the entire song. But the solo is really well done over the top of it. And just imagine how heavy a song like this sounded in 1982. I mean, because again, we are still before the whole birth and rise of thrash. So this is pretty heavy. I would have to think this was before my time, but I can't imagine what people were thinking when they put this record on and heard this song. It is a killer.
Yes, and I also had in my notes that it's almost doom-like, and it's, you know, plodding rhythm, pounding rhythm in that song. So yes, you're right there with the doom thing. And I'm not saying the Twisted Sister created doom. Of course, Black Sabbath did, I guess. But I mean, I'm not saying that they're sounding like Sabbath at all either. It just has a few moments. And yeah, it probably is the heaviest song on the album. And I was going to say, it's maybe a more traditional metal. I'm trying to think of why didn't I hear, or maybe I did hear this stuff, because 1982 is when I got into heavy metal. And I'm just trying to go back in my memory. You know, that's a long time ago now. About, did I hear this before Stay Hungry or what? I'm trying to remember, but I can't remember that I did. So I don't know. I should have if I didn't, but I don't remember having this back when I had like the Number of the Beasts and those albums, the Kill 'Em All 83, I guess, but I don't remember hearing them until after that, which is kind of weird. I don't know why. But again, it's different. Like you say, you're born in the internet age. I wasn't born in the internet age. So we didn't have the internet to have the stuff, and we didn't have YouTube or whatever. We had Much Music, MTV, United States. But I don't think they had any hit videos back then. So yeah, it just took longer, I guess, to find these bands sometimes, especially me living in a small town in Canada too, where, you know, you couldn't, there wasn't any place to go see live bands or anything like that either. So you wouldn't hear. And in my high school, when I was in high school, I would say, like, in my first, like in the year of 82, when, because the Number of the Beast came out, I've said this before on the podcast, but I bought a t-shirt off it, I wore it to school. And I think I was the first person to wear an Iron Maiden shirt in my high school. Because everybody says, what's that, whatever. So nobody even knew what it was. So it wasn't like there was a lot of people to even talk about it. But there was some. But anyway, there wasn't a lot of people at the start until, you know, it really took off in 82 and 83. And then other people started wearing the shirts to school and stuff like that, too. Anyway, I got off track.
That's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool distinction, though. I mean, you think about that trilogy of albums with Number of the Beast, Peace of Mind, and Power Slave. Doesn't get much better in all of metal's history than that. So.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, I got off track there. So now we go to the title track, Under the Blade. And what do you think of this one?
Yeah, this one is another one. Like I mentioned a moment ago, you might be able to make an argument that for this one being the heaviest song on the album, I would still go with Destroyer, just a little bit edging this one out in terms of heaviness. But this is another fierce song. We start off with some strumming. We get some melodic guitar lines over the top of it. That guitar tandem, again, working really well together, Fingers and JJ. Then D comes in, begins with that powerful singing. And then when the drummer's cymbals crash and that buildup continues, it just gives way to this good, upbeat, really, really heavy riff. And the melody I want to comment on during the verses, the melody really reminds me of Judas Priest. And I can't really put my finger on the exact song necessarily. I think it just kind of gave me sort of a Judas Priest vibe. But of course, we've touched on the Priest influence a couple of times already. And Priest's debut album, Rock-A-Rolla, was 74. So they had been around by for not too far from a decade at this point. So you're starting to wonder who in heavy music was not influenced by Judas Priest, certainly at that time. And you could even make that argument for a lot of bands today, I would say. You could probably read biographies for a lot of different bands across a lot of different genres and see Judas Priest as an influence for quite a few of them. So I could easily picture Rob Halford singing this melody, but D does an incredible job with it. Another fantastic solo as the song approaches the midway point. Really well done. And D proclaims, "You are under the blade." And just that incredible, just menacing type of vocal line there. And he lets out another pretty ferocious scream. And I gotta say, that scream wouldn't have seemed too out of place on like an obituary album. And I'm not even, I know this was 82, so this was well before the rise of death metal, but that type of scream, I can't imagine what the reaction was from fans at the time, but it is absolutely ferocious. And then the song gears up for another great finish. We get that blazing guitar work. It's on full display. So a really, really just another very strong track on this album.
And I just checked out the set list website, which says when what the songs they played live, and this is the song they played live the most from this album. As I guess I was wrong about what you don't know, sure can't hurt you. They don't start every show with that, I guess, as they've played Under the Blade like 60 more times and they've played that song live. So I guess I was wrong there. I was just assuming they might do that one first all the time, but I did see it first a bunch of times. But
It was a good guess.
But
I would have
yeah,
guessed that
that's what I would have did, I think. But anyway, but yes, Under the Blade is the top song from this album that they played live. If that website setlist.fm is correct, is what I'm saying. Now, where is I? Sorry. And yeah, I don't have anything. It's yeah, I don't really need to add anything to that. The next one, I'll see. Oh, you'll probably know this too. But anyway, we're gonna go into the next song, "Tear It Loose." What do you think of this one?
Yeah, so for this one, the name of the song I think says it all, right? This one is it's a little bit of a shorter song. I think it may be the shortest song on the album, but I haven't checked the run times on every single one. But it is a fast and short song, and it gets right to the point. Now the drums are what really set the tone for the song right out of the gate. And D. Snyder is absolutely going nuts on this song. The way he spits out the lyrics, it can only be described as a rapid fire type of vocal delivery. And just another great track that has another darker type of cadence to it, just a dark feel to the song in general. And even though there's definitely some melody present in the song, it never loses that feeling of menace throughout the entire thing. And that's a descriptor I kept coming back to throughout most of the songs. The solo on this one is especially fast on this song. Guitar work is great throughout, like we've said, but the solo is incredibly fast on this song. Just another face melter, if you will. And AJ Perrow, may he rest in peace. He really earns his keep on this song on the drums, because it's not an easy task to keep up with the flow of everything. But just a fantastic song for the weight room, by the way. I'm a big time into working out. I run a couple times a week and do weights a few times a week. So throwing on this song, if you're struggling to make it through your last set or run one more mile while you're doing your workout, put this song on. It'll take care of it for you.
Yeah, it's a just it's 3 minutes and 9 seconds, this one, which I'm pretty sure, yes, is the shortest one on the album, but it's, I guess, the fastest one too, possibly on the album too. And maybe you didn't know this. I didn't know this till I researched this, but the second, there's two guitar solos in it, or I guess they're right after each other. But so JJ French does the first one, but the second one is Fast Eddie Clarke from Motorhead. Did you? Oh, I didn't
I
know
had
that.
no idea. That
Yeah,
is awesome.
he was a guest on the album, and it's surprising that he could be the guest on their debut album, but they
Wow.
must have been friends or something like that. Somebody must have been friends or whatever. But yeah, I just realized that when I researched it, that Fast Eddie Clarke
Wow. And I
really
know we're audio only here, but I'm actually wearing a Motorhead shirt as we're recording this. So pretty cool.
But yeah, I always love Fast Eddie Clarke in Motorhead and then at Fastway for a couple albums. But yeah, so that was a surprise to me too, just researching this, thinking, oh, I didn't know Fast Eddie Clarke was on this, just in that solo, that second solo on that album song. And then we end with, at least for the regular version we're doing, we end with Day of the Rocker. And what do you think of that one?
Yeah, what a fantastic way to close this album. And it's like I was alluding to earlier, as much as I love thrash, it's probably my second favorite style of metal, period. And I love songs that are played at a pace of a million miles an hour, kind of that speed of light thrash attack. I also love it when a band slows the pace down and does a nice thick, kind of syrupy blues-soaked riff, and that's really what we get on this song. Really, a bluesy pace to it. The guitars just have a way of making you feel like, man, I can just relax and soak up the goodness of this song. The guitar work, it kicks in right away, and during the verses, it's mostly Dee singing over this nice pounding bass line. It's a song I could almost see B.B. King singing, funny enough. Yeah, at least just in terms of the cadence. Dee does a nice job of adding atmosphere to the song as it goes. And it's another one I could also have seen AC/DC recording. They had a lot of bluesy songs throughout the years, whether from those early albums or especially on their 1995 album Ballbreaker, where they had a song called The Boogeyman that was very bluesy, and Stiff Upper Lip had some bluesy stuff on it. So I could see a couple of different artists that were coming to mind as I was listening to this, but the solo is absolutely perfect for the whole vibe of the song, and it continues on for a good solid while. It's a real treat for the listener, especially those who really pay attention to guitar work and appreciate solos. It extends for a nice long time on this one, and then we get a nice bass groove that really is the backbone of the song. On this one, Mark Mendoza, he goes by the nickname The Animal. Really, really nice bass groove. He really holds down the whole structure of the song. And then D, I think, even channels his inner bluesman. In fact, you can hear he actually shouts out, "Bring it down, boys," as the song is coming down to its last couple of minutes. And something I could see a blues artist doing in the middle of a smoky club with a top hat and shades on. I could definitely see that whole scene playing out before the final stretch of the song kicks in. And I really love good bluesy hard rock in general. I just love that sound. And so I think this is a great way to close a fantastic album. And who doesn't feel a nice adrenaline rush on this one, right as D, along with some gang vocals, shouts out "Day of the Rock, rock, rocker." Talk about an incredible live part to the song, I guess, a thing that they could do live. I could just picture the entire audience, fists raised in the air, rock, rock, rocker. I just think this is a great way to close the album.
But you know what's funny? They just looked it up. They only played the song live three times.
Oh, wow. Oh, goodness. That hurts my heart.
I'm not sure why exactly, because yes, it does seem like it would be a good one to play live for the fans to get involved. But I guess they had other ones for that. But yeah, it says they only played it live three times. So that's kind of strange. But anyway, yeah, so I don't have anything to add on the song. But yeah, there's no like ballads on this song. Like we said, that the second track, Bad Boys Rock and Roll, was the least heavy one, but it's still not really a ballad, I guess you'd say. And I'm not sure.
I guess there wasn't really any ballads till probably Come Out and Play. And then you had that lame song.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, leader of the pack. Sorry, I guess if it's on your top 10 list, but the leader of the pack, right? Listen to that last night. You know, this is like from Happy Days, this song.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. Anyway, so let's rate the album. Excuse me. What would you give this album out of 10?
Yeah, so it is my favorite Twisted Sister album. I really love You Can't Stop Rock and Roll. I love Stay Hungry. And even most of Come Out and Play. But for me, this one is one that they never quite topped, even though they've got a lot of great songs. So for me, I am going to give it a 9 out of 10. And the only reason I'm docking it a point is, even though it's going to sound contradictory because I do enjoy the song, but it's because of that second song, Bad Boys of Rock and Roll. I enjoy it. It's fun. I love a little cheese in my metal every now and then. I mean, I'm a major Hammerfall fan, if anybody gets that reference. So I don't mind cheese in the lyrics, but it does seem to be a song that, again, maybe they're trying to give the listeners a respite, but it seems to be the one track that doesn't necessarily fit in on the entire album, because really all the other 8 tracks on the version that we're doing all are pretty heavy and pretty ferocious. So I'm going to go with a 9 for this one.
Okay, and I was also going to give it a 9 out of 10. I like the Stay Hungry album. Now, again, that would have been the first Twisted Sister album I listened to, and I probably listened to it a lot, which we'll get to in the top 10 list. And then I would have went back to listen to these ones. But now that I listen to them, I would say this is my favorite Twisted Sister album, and I do go back to it once in a while and listen to it more than I do Stay Hungry. But then it might be because I heard Stay Hungry so much when it was out that year and when they became so big, and watched the video a bunch of times because they were funny and stupid and whatever, silly, and all that PMRC stuff too when they were kicking it. Have you ever seen Twisted Sister live?
I have not, unfortunately. I was hoping they would come close to where I lived on Long Island when I was a teenager. But and they probably did, given that Dee Snider was from that area. I really didn't start going to live shows. I was a little bit of a late bloomer. I was in my 20s by the time I really started going to concerts. So I did not have a chance to see them live. And like we were talking about earlier, other than that pseudo Christmas album they did in 06, the year that I moved to Long Island, all of their other albums they had already recorded and released before my time. So I might have come along just a little bit too late to be able to see him live. But I know he's some people think he's a little bit brash, maybe a little caustic because he's so outspoken, but I'm a major Dee Snider fan, so I would have loved to see them, but unfortunately I have not.
Okay, and as I briefly mentioned, I've seen them live, but only once, and they opened for Iron Maiden in 1982, or yeah, 80, no. Sorry, 84 on the Power Slave tour. Sorry, they opened for Iron Maiden, but we were late because I took a bus tour to this. That was my first ever concert, was that one. And so we were late getting there. So Twisted Sister was already playing. So like I said, I didn't see what they started the show out with. I might be able to look that up, but it doesn't matter. But so I don't even remember. I know they played We're Not Gonna Take It, obviously. But I can't really remember much about Twisted Sister, except I remember somebody had a sign that said "Fuck Duran Duran" or something, and they threw it on stage. And Dee Snider, I remember Dee Snider saying something like, "I'm sure they have," or something like that. I don't know what he was saying, but he didn't criticize Duran Duran or anything. She just showed the sign, but because probably just because of the MTV video thing, and I don't really know why Duran Duran was mentioned. Maybe I can go back and look something up. Maybe Duran Duran said something about Toast's sister. I don't know. I don't know what
Were they
happened, but
unfortunate bystanders, you
it's just
know?
something I remember seeing. That's about the only thing I really remember about Toast's sister, because I was there. Because I'm not even sure if I heard Twisted Sister before that show, possibly, but I don't know. Again, it's too hard to remember. If I knew back then that I was going to have a podcast 40 years later, it would have made these little notes, but I didn't know that. So, anyway, so yeah, that's the only time I've seen them live. Anyway, So we're gonna do our top. Oh, I thought I had something else here. I had some notes, but now I can't find it. Just a second here. But we're gonna do our top tens here in a second. Oh, I will once say one thing that I remember. I can't find where I left my notes on it, but they guested on the Pee Wee Herman movie, Pee Wee's Big Adventure, or whatever the movie was called. I don't
Oh,
think I've ever
wow. I
seen
didn't
the
know that.
movie. But when Pee Wee Herman died there last year, I believe it was, or maybe 2 years ago, they would show Tuss's sister because they were playing Burn in Hell, I think. It was like they were making their music video while and Pee Wee Herman was running through or some freaking thing. I don't remember, but anyway, that's out there if anybody wants to. It's probably on YouTube too, where you don't have to watch the whole movie. You don't want to, even though a lot of people like Pee Wee Herman movie and stuff. But anyway, yeah, they guessed it on that. I had other notes about stuff, but it doesn't matter. Now, where's my top 10 list? I'll do mine first, so that you can talk after me, and then I'll say goodbye. Okay.
Cool.
So my top 10. Now I actually have 11, so you can do a honorable mention you wanted. The only reason I wanted to do my honorable mention was because, so my number 11, I guess I'll say, is Come Out and Play. And I'm only mentioning that. I mean, it's a good song, but it's not as good as my other 10, but it is because they start the song from, like they did in the movie. There's a movie about gangs called Warriors, and it's one of my favorite movies. And there's a scene near the end of the movie where there's a guy tapping bottles together, and he's saying, "Warriors, come out and play," which is obviously where they got the title of this album. And they say they have the same thing where they have somebody doing that, saying, "Twisted Sister, come out and play," or whatever. And if my voice wasn't so screwed up, I'd try to do like the guy did in the movie. Or in this. But anyway, I like that part because that was one of the, and the album cover, I do have that album, but it shows like the street thing. I can't remember the whatever, but D. Snyder's face, it pops out or whatever on the album, I think. I'll have to look it up later to make sure, but I'm sure I have that where it pops up. It's like a pop-up album cover or something. The Great and the Road, I just can't remember the name of it right now, but anyway. So that would be my number 11. Now, I didn't write all my other 10 songs are from the first three albums. Now, I didn't make a note of which, so you'll have to know what albums they're from. But my number 10 is Power and the Glory, which I believe is from the second album. And my number 9 is Like a Knife in the Back, which is also from that album, I believe. Number 8, I have I'll Take You Alive, which is also from that one, isn't it? Yeah. I have a streak there. Number 7, I got The Beast, which is from Stay Hungry. I like the riffing in that one there. That's kind of a classic metal riffing kind of song there. Number 6, I have Under the Blade, title track of this album. Number 5, I have Sin After Sin from this one. Number 4, I had Horror Teria, which was what Captain Howdy and I forget, but that's from Stay Hungry. That's like a 7-minute song, but there's a lot of horror movie kind of things, which explains D. Snyder doing some horror movie stuff later on. And my number 3 is What You Don't Know Sure Can't Hurt You from this album. My number 2 is You Can't Stop Rock and Roll, which of course is from the second album. And my number 1 song is Burn in Hell, as I did, which is from Stay Hungry, as I always loved that song. And like I used to, there was a black metal band, Dimmu Borgir, if I'm saying that right, and they did a cover of Burn in Hell, and it's awesome too. It's like but yeah, I've always loved that song by Twisted Sister. And I bought that black I don't listen to black metal much, but I bought that album just for that, to hear that, have that song Burn in Hell, because it sounds even more evil, of course,
Yeah.
in that way. So check that out if you haven't listened to it, if you ever heard it before. And if you haven't seen the movie Warriors, make sure you watch it. It's like from the 70s or 80s, but it's a great movie. And it's not as violent as today's gang movies would be, but it's a good movie. Anyway, okay, let's hear your top 10 Twisted Sister song.
Cool. Great list, Blake. And I don't think we're going to have a whole lot of overlap, which will make it kind of interesting. And I'm the same as you. The first three albums are where my list resides. The album that we covered today is going to be heavily represented, let's just say. But I've got a couple of honorable mentions too. I guess I'll start with the honorable mentions. I Believe in Rock and Roll from Come Out and Play. The Fire Still Burns from Come Out and Play, and then Looking Out for Number One. Those were a few songs from that album that I really, really liked.